Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, The Passing Away of Bhishma Dev, Text 36. Vyavaita Pritana Mukham Nariksha Sva Jana Vadat Vimukasya Dosha Budhya Kumatim Aharad Atma Vidyaya Yash Charana Rati Paramasya Tasya Me Stu Vyavahita Pritana Mukham Nariksha Svajana Vadhat Vimukasa Dosha Budhya Kumati Marat Atma Vidyaya Yash Charana Rati Paramasya Tasya Mestu Vyavahita Pritana Mukham Nariksha Svajana Vadhat Vimukasya Dosha Budhya Kumati Maharad Atma Vidyaya Yash Charanarati Paramasya Tasya Mestu Vyavahita Pritana Mukham Nariksha Svajana Vadhat Vimukasya Dosha Budhya Kumati Maharat Atma Vidyaya Yash Charanarati Paramasya Tasya Mestu Vivahita Pritana Mukham Nariksha Anavara Vimukasya Dosha Bhugya Mati Mara Dhamma Vidyaya Yash Charanarati Paramasya Tasya Mestu Vaita Pritana Mukham Nariksha Anavarhat Vimakasya Dosha Budhya Kumati Maharad Ratma Vidyaya Yash Anavarati Paramasya Tasya Mestu Vaita Pritana Mukham Nariksha Sajana Vadhad Vimukasya Dosha Budhya Kumati Maharad Atma Vidyaya Yash Sajana Vyayat Mukhasya Dosha Budhya Muti Maharad Atma Vidyaya Yash Anarati Paramas Mishtu Vivaita Pritanama Kamanriksha Ajana Vara Vimakasya Doshabudya Samati Maharad Vividyayash Taranarati Paramasitasya Mestu. Vaishnavis, Sajana Varadimakasi Doshabhudya Kumati Maharad Atmavidya Yayas Charanarati Paramasitasamishtu Vivaita Pritanamukha Miksha Swajana Vadhad Vimakasya Dosha Buddha Kumati Mad Atma Vidya Yayash Charanarati Paramasita Simestu Vyavahita. Standing at a distance. Pritana. Soldiers. Mukham, faces. Niriksha, by looking upon. Swajana, kinsmen. Vadat, from the act of killing. Vimukasya, one who is reluctant. Dosha buddhya, by polluted intelligence. Kumatim, poor fund of knowledge. Aharat, eradicated. Atmavidyaya, by transcendental knowledge. Yaha, he who. Charana, to the feet. Ratihi, attraction. Paramasya, of the Supreme. Tasya, for him. May, my. Astu, let there be. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation. When Arjuna was seemingly polluted by ignorance upon observing the soldiers and commanders before him on the battlefield, the Lord eradicated his ignorance by delivering transcendental knowledge. May his lotus feet always remain the object of my attraction. Purport. The king and commanders were to stand in front of the fighting soldiers. That was the system of actual fighting. The kings and commanders were not so-called presidents or ministers of defense as they are today. They would not stay home while the poor soldiers or mercenaries were fighting face to face. This may be the regulation of modern democracy, but when actual monarchy was prevailing, the monarchs were not cowards elected without consideration of qualification. As it was evident from the battlefield of Kurukshetra, all the executive heads of both parties, like Drona, Bhishma, Arjuna, and Duryodhana, were not sleeping. All of them were actual participants in the fighting, which was selected to be executed at a place away from the civil residential quarters. This means that the innocent citizens were immune from all the effects of fighting between the rival royal parties. The citizens had no business in seeing what was going to happen during such fighting. They were to pay one-fourth of their income to the ruler, whether he be Arjuna or Duryodhana. All the commanders of the parties on the battlefield of Kurukshetra were standing face to face, and Arjuna saw them with great compassion and lamented that he was to kill his kinsmen on the battlefield for the sake of the empire. He was not at all afraid of the giant military phalanx presented by Duryodhana, but as a merciful devotee of the Lord, renunciation of worldly things was natural for him, and thus he decided not to fight for worldly possessions. But this was due to a poor fund of knowledge, and therefore it is said here that his intelligence became polluted. His intelligence could not be polluted at any time because he was a devotee and constant companion of the Lord, as is clear in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Apparently, Arjuna's intelligence became polluted because otherwise there would not have been a chance to deliver the teachings of Bhagavad Gita for the good of all polluted, conditioned souls engaged in material bondage by the conception of the false material body. The Bhagavad Gita was delivered to the conditioned souls of the world to deliver them from the wrong conception of identifying the body with the soul and to reestablish the soul's eternal relation with the Supreme Lord. Atmavidya, or transcendental knowledge of himself, was primarily spoken by the Lord for the benefit of all concerned in all parts of the universe. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So in his purport, Srila Prabhupada begins by stressing that the executive leaders of society, if there's warfare, they should be engaged themselves. And, you know, this was common several centuries ago in the Western world. You had Napoleon, who was the head of France, and when he engaged in warfare, he was out on the battlefield with his soldiers. But in modern times, that's not so much the fact anymore, as Srila Prabhupada mentions in the modern democracies. You know, the leaders are elected by the people, and, you know, if they engage in warfare, generally they're not involved personally. You know, sometimes you see movies. I saw one movie about Churchill, and, you know, they show him in his office, you know, agonizing about the decision whether to go to war or not. And finally he says, we've got to go, but he's not going. Somebody else is going, as Srila Prabhupada mentions here. The soldiers and the mercenaries were fighting face to face. So, you know, we may wonder how many wars would be declared if the leaders who declare them actually have to go themselves. So, it's things like this that I remember reading when I first encountered Krishna consciousness that really struck me, you know, that Srila Prabhupada knew what the situation was. This wasn't just some abstract philosophy. It had real impact and meaning for things that were going on in the world. Of course, occasionally here in this country, you know, the president has been a military person, but it's been a long time. And, you know, George Washington, he was a military man, you know, commander of the American Revolutionary Army. He became the first president. I wouldn't doubt that if some war had been declared during his presidency, he would have gone to the front. But, and even the so-called generals, you know, who are involved in the military, very often they're not present on the actual battlefront either. So Srila Prabhupada is pointing this out. And he says it's a feature of modern democracy. In the Vedic times, as Srila Prabhupada is mentioning, the battles would be fought between the royal armies away from the civilian residential areas. And there were some rules and regulations. You know, they were professional military people. They were Kshatriyas. It was their duty to fight. They were trained to fight. But it wasn't a total free-for-all. They had rules and regulations. The fighting was carried on away from the civilian population. And, you know, that was the system even in Europe and the West when they still had monarchy. You know, when the democratic systems became more prevalent, it was government for the people, by the people, of the people. So there wasn't as big a distinction between the leaders and the people, because the people are electing the leaders. Therefore, they're involved directly or indirectly in the warfare process. So we can see in modern warfare, like in World War II, the civilian populations themselves were attacked. You know, the Allied forces, even the Americans and the British, you know, they firebombed Japanese cities. They dropped atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, because in the modern democratic systems, everybody is contributing to the war effort. You know, they have draft, you know, so that all the people are eligible for military service. I think in this country they still have it. They're not using it right now, but when a person turns, what is it, 18, they have to register for it even now. Is that a fact? Yeah. So if some big war starts, then they'll do that. So the whole population is considered part of the war machine, and it can be attacked. Of course, the Vedic system was Chaturvarnya Maya Shristam. Krishna says, you know, I've made the system of varnas, occupational duties, where you have, you know, people by qualification who are brahmanas, people by nature and qualification who are kshatriyas or military people or executives, people who are by qualification and nature engaged in vaishya activities, krishiko rakshavanijam, cow protection, agriculture and trade or business or banking. And then there are the sudras, the artisans and the laborers. And each one of them was meant to get their income in a different way. You know, Srila Prabhupada is mentioning here that the people's, the ordinary citizens, their duty was to give one-fourth of their income to the ruler, whoever it was. So, you know, the brahmanas were meant to exist on charity. They could accept charity. The kshatriyas were to take taxes, but not unlimited taxes, a maximum of 25%. And mostly that was to be kept in reserve for emergencies that might happen, where the citizens might need assistance. You know, if there's some drought or famine or some difficulty, the kshatriyas would have wealth and food in reserve that would be returned to the population. But they were also allowed to keep a certain amount for themselves, and they could display certain opulence. You know, the kings could display a certain opulence because of their position of power and prestige in society. And, you know, the vaishyas, were allowed to exist on the profit from their activities. And the ordinary people were expected to be supported, provided with food, shelter, education, medical care, everything. You know, they were meant to be provided that by the higher orders of society. You know, so there was, you know, a Vedic system of economics. But the fighting was to be carried on by the Kshatriya order only, and the others weren't supposed to be engaged in that type of activity. As I said, in the modern democracies, things are different. Everybody is considered to be a potential soldier, you know, subject to be taken in. So, in the next part of the purport, Srila Prabhupada discusses Arjuna's position, and he says, his intelligence could not be polluted at any time because he was a devotee and constant companion of the Lord, as is clear from the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So it appears that what Srila Prabhupada is referring to there is the first part of the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. The first verse of the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is Imam Vivasvate Yoga Praktivanaham Avyayam Vivasvan Manave Praha Manar Ikshrakave Bravit. And there Krishna is explaining that he first gives the teachings that are there in the Bhagavad Gita to Vivasan, the god of the sun planet. And then Vivasvan passes the same teachings on to Swayambhuva Manu, who is the forefather of the human population in the universe. And then it said that Swayambhuva Manu, passes the teachings on to King Ikshvaku, who is a king on this earth planet. And he's the first king in the Surya Vamsha. According to the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are two principal royal dynasties on this earth planet. There's the Surya Vamsha, the line coming from the sun god, and then there's the Chandra Vamsha, the lunar dynasty, which is coming down from the moon god. So there are two basic lines of Kshatriya dynasties on earth. And King Ikshvaku was the first in the solar dynasty. Lord Ramachandra later appeared in that dynasty. Krishna appeared in the lunar dynasty of Kshatriyas. So, and this took place a long time ago in his purport to that first verse of the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Srila Prabhupada mentions that the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita have existed on earth for about 120 million years. That's when King Ikshvaku was living. That's at the beginning of the current Manvantar. You know, the Vedic concept of time is cyclical, and the basic unit is the day of Brahma, or the Kalpa. It lasts for 4,320,000,000 years, and it's divided into 14 Manvantar periods, each one ruled by a different Manu. So each of those periods lasts roughly 300 million years. So the first one is the Swayambhuva Manvantar. You know, that's about 2 billion years ago. But we're now in the seventh Manvantar, the Vaivasvata Manvantar, where the Manu is the son of Vivasvan, and that's what Krishna is referring to in this first verse of the fourth chapter of the Gita, Imam Vivasvate Yogam Proktavanaham Avyayam, talking about Vivasvan, who gives the teachings to his son Manu, the Vaivasvata Manu, who gives the teachings to Ikshvaku, the first king of the solar dynasty. So each Manvantar is composed of, I think it's 72 cycles of four yugas. So we're now in the Kali Yuga of the 28th yuga cycle of the seventh or Vaivasvata Manvantar. So if you add it up, this Manvantar started about 120 million years ago. And Krishna is saying in that verse in the Bhagavad Gita that 120 million years ago, Manu gave the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita to King Ikshvaku. And so that's why Srila Prabhupada says the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita have been present on earth for 120 million years. But then in the next verse of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains something else. Evam parampara praptam imam rajarshiyo vidu sakalena mata yoganashta parantapa. So, evam parampara praptam. Then the knowledge was passed down from King Ikshvaku to the next king, to the next one, to the next one, by the system of parampara. The Vedic knowledge, the teachings of Bhagavad Gita are passed down through the chain from one guru to disciple to the next. So that's why we have to receive the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita from a guru who's in the parampara. You know, but there are many paramparas, and apparently one parampara was among the Rajarshis, who were not only Kshatriyas, but great saints. Raja means king, Rishi means saint. So these Rajarshis had a line of disciplic succession. But Krishna says, Sakalena Mata Yoganashta Parantapa, that the line of disciplic succession can be broken by the powerful force of time. That happens. But Krishna says, in the next verse, in the third verse of the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that he's going to restore the teachings of the Gita, and he selected Arjuna to be the recipient of those teachings. Sa evayam maya tedya yoga prokta paratana. Let's see, what is the next line? You are my friend and devotee. Bhaktosi me sakacheti. Yeah. Bhaktosi me sakacheti. Rahasyam hiya tadutamam. So is it, Krishna's explaining, although the disciplic succession has been broken, I'm going to restore it by teaching you that yoga paratana, that old system of yoga, that original system of yoga that I spoke long ago to the sun god. I'm going to restore the system by speaking the same thing to you. And why is that? Because you are my friend and devotee, and therefore you're capable of understanding this rahasyam uttamam, this supreme mystery. So that's why, you know, Srila Prabhupada says in this purport, his intelligence could not be polluted at any time. If his intelligence was polluted and could not, if it was really polluted, then he wouldn't have been selected as the one to receive these teachings. Krishna wouldn't have called him his friend and devotee if his intelligence was actually polluted. So it was just an arrangement. Like it says in the translation, when Arjuna was seemingly polluted, so not actually, it was just an arrangement for the Bhagavad Gita to be spoken. And this knowledge, finally, in this purport, Srila Prabhupada describes the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita as Atma Vidya, or transcendental knowledge of himself. So Atma can mean the self, or it can mean the supreme self. And Bhagavad Gita teaches about both. You know, Srila Prabhupada sums up the whole Bhagavad Gita in a sentence here at the end of this purport. It says, the Bhagavad Gita was delivered to the conditioned souls of the world, to deliver them from the wrong conception of identifying the body with the soul, and to reestablish the soul's eternal relation with the Supreme Lord. So, the Bhagavad Gita is meant for two kinds of Atma Vidya, to establish that the real Atma is not the body, but the soul within the body, and then that's not sufficient. One has to further understand that that individual soul within the body has a relationship with the Supreme Soul, the Paramatma, the Supreme Atma, Lord Krishna. And that relationship is one of devotional service. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any comment or question? Yes?
In regards to the dynasties, Asura and Chandra dynasty, are those completely gone in Kali Yuga? And if so, could they possibly be revived?
Could they be revived? It appears, you know, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it kind of describes what the last, you know, predicts the end of the dynasties. And it says also there's a place in the Himalayas called Kalapagram, where there are two personalities. I forget their names exactly right at this moment, but there are two personalities, a representative of the Surya Vamsa and the Chandra Vamsa, who, after Kalki comes and destroys all the remaining demoniac personalities, when the next Satya Yuga begins, the two dynasties will be restored. Now, whether it's possible in the golden age of Lord Chaitanya for these dynasties to be restored, that I don't know. I mean, there may be people even today in India who claim, you know, there are different kings and princes who may claim some connection with those original dynasties. But I'm not quite sure about that. Does anybody have any insight on that? Is this about that or some of... Okay, Bhrigupati.
I remember hearing a conversation. Some devotees asked Prabhupada about that, and or maybe it was a class, and Prabhupada confirmed that, yeah, that these families are there, and if we want real Kshatriyas, they have to come from those families. And I mean, you know, it's hard to remember exactly what he said, but that, I remember that I had the distinct impression. Prabhupada was saying that, yeah, they could be found from these Kshatriya families. Maru and Devapi are the names, by the way, of those two that are living up, waiting for the end of the Kali Yuga. Those two personalities, Maru and Devapi, I believe.
Yeah, Maru and Devapi. Yeah, those are the names. Is this about this question, Arjuna? Anything else on this? Anybody have any? Okay, Arjuna Prabhu.
Hi, Prabhu. Thank you for a very insightful class. You mentioned 413 Chaturvarnam, and it seems that we are always stressing the different varnas, and you have to have the qualification and training to be in one or the other. But on the other hand, it seems that there's overlapping, just like now we were talking about the disciplic successions. The Kshatriyas are supposed to be guided by the Brahmanas, so the business of spreading Vedic knowledge, it seems, should come from the Brahmanas. But we have so many examples of the Kshatriyas themselves spreading this Vedic knowledge. So it seems to be overlapping. It's not listed in their qualifications that Krishna gives in the 18th chapter. You see what I'm saying? So it seems that the Varnas do overlap, And if you look at the list of Mahajans, there are many Chachuryas there. So it seems, again, that the dissemination of Vedic knowledge is not strictly the business of the Brahmanas. The Chachuryas also take up that role. So that seems to be a little bit at conflict with what we always stress, that you have to have the qualifications of a Brahmin and be trained as a Brahmana. You have to have the qualifications of a Chachurya and be trained as a Chachurya. But it seems that they're constantly overlapping, especially on this subject of spreading Vedic knowledge.
Yes, it's interesting. And this fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that I was referring to, Krishna says, Evam Parampara Praptam Imam Rajarshayo Vidahu, that there was a system of transmitting Vedic knowledge through the line of Rajarshis who were expected to rule society. And they had their own disciplic succession coming from Vivasvan to Manu to Ikshvaku down through the solar dynasty up to the time of Arjuna. That appears to be right, because normally we talk about the four Vaishnava disciplic successions, paramparas, the one coming from Brahma, the other coming from the Kumaras, from Lakshmi, from Shiva. And we're in the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. But it appears from the Gita that there was a parampara, a disciplic succession for the Rajarshis as well.
An intentional overlapping of this particular responsibility of disseminating knowledge. For instance, Krishna himself went to Sandipani to be taught the Vedic arts and subjects. But
right. On
the battlefield, he didn't say, hold on, let me call Sandipani to come and teach you. You see what I'm saying? The Chachas themselves seem to take up this particular subject of disseminating spiritual knowledge, which seems to be an overlapping of the responsibility. Normally, you would expect them to be trained by Brahmanas in that subject, so why not have the Brahmanas come and give that knowledge when the time is necessary? Like now, Arjuna is in doubt. Why not say, okay, let me call Sandipani Muni to teach you? No, he takes up that responsibility directly. And we have that, again, throughout the Mahajans. We have, Janaka, Bhishmo, Bali, so many direct Kshatriyas who take up the responsibility of disseminating spiritual knowledge. So it seems, again, to be overlapping. And we stress that you have to be trained as one or the other. Prabhupada said, in Kali Yuga, the reason why you have this problem is because there's overlapping of nobody knows what they are. Are you a Brahmin? Are you a Vaishya? What are you? Ramashankar definitely means that. It's not just unwanted population. It means someone whose varna cannot be determined. So it seems we stress the varnas must be set up and they must be determined and you must act as one or the other. But then the Chachas take on this very, very high responsibility of disseminating spiritual knowledge, which seems to be overlapping the Brahmana's responsibility. Why do you need Brahmanas then if the Chachas are going to disseminate spiritual knowledge?
Because Krishna set it up that way. Okay, who?
It's up to you. Who do you want me to give the mic to?
All right. Such an honor.
Can we actually say that above all these designations that have been given, they're actually Vaishnavas, and in that way they is justified for them to be doing that? If it's Vaishnava, that means that they are above all these other material so-called designations.
That is an important point. Okay, let's see what time it is. Okay, one more from Bhrigupati, and then...
Yeah. Thank you. How come Arjuna's name doesn't make it onto the list? He's not in the disciplic succession. I mean, he is, but... he's not on the list there.
Apparently, it's a different disciplic succession. As I said, there's the Vaishnava Brahminical disciplic successions, like the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, which is in the list. And then there's this other disciplic succession that Krishna is mentioning in the Bhagavad Gita for the Rajarshis. And he is in that list. There's
different lists.
Krishna, Vivasvan, Manu, Ikshvaku, and then apparently the other kings in the solar dynasty. And then it's broken, and Krishna says he's going to start it again with Arjuna. But maybe it didn't go very far after that. But in the last line of the purport here, Srila Prabhupada says, Atma Vidya, or transcendental knowledge of himself, was primarily spoken by the Lord for the benefit of all concerned in all parts of the universe. So, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.